Tom Woods Show, episode 2268.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. We all know it is time for us to break up, but everybody's status quo bias is standing in the way of this obvious and humane solution. Check out my brand new ebook called National Divorce, The Peaceful Solution to Irreconcilable Differences, which you can get for free at nationaldivorce.com. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. Well, nepotism is alive and well here on the Tom Woods Show because I am featuring a member of my family today. This is actually, Paul Leno is my wife's uncle.
That's right.
Paul, you got here on your own merits, not because of the special privilege of, you know, indirectly being related to me. This is entirely on your own merits. I am thrilled to talk to you because when I first met you, maybe you were a year or so into the YouTube stuff that you do.
Right.
And you were already having great success with it. And that's all I wanted to talk about. I couldn't, oh my gosh, I'm meeting a guy who makes his living online. But more than that, the entire personal story around this, and not to mention your knowledge that you've gained from doing that, there's so much that's valuable for people to hear. So I've been hounding you to come on the Tom Woods Show. And somehow the last attempt was successful because here you are.
Sure. Yeah. You did a podcast with Matt, and I listened to that podcast and
Matt McWilliams. Yeah.
Yeah. It got me excited to where I'm like, Tom, you've been asking me for over a year now. I'm definitely going to come on the show now.
That is so great. That is so great. All right. We're going to start by telling people what you do, and then we're going to back up and go into your personal story. And then we're going to go back to what you do and unpack it. So you have a YouTube channel where are the Scrap and Pallet Man. So describe what I will find when I, of course, I'm going to link to the channel on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2268. What am I going to find when I go to that channel?
For one, it's an entertaining channel. But I want to preface it with, I'm an accidental YouTuber. I didn't mean to do this. What happened was 5 years ago, during kind of a low part in my life, you know, I just got divorced, and this is a divorce that happened in my sobriety, and we'll talk about my story, but actually in sobriety, you know, life can kind of beat us up a little bit as well. So I was coming off of a divorce and I was watching a lot of YouTube and watching YouTube channels, and I'm like, you know what? I can do this. And so I took my phone out and I started recording some things that I was doing, which was at the time finding scrap metal and doing some dumpster diving, because that's what I was doing and that's what I was watching on YouTube. And so I started making some videos, and for some reason people started watching them and following my daily activities at the time, and it started becoming popular. Now, and I'm not even kidding, I had probably 30 videos going before I even knew that you could be monetized on YouTube.
Oh, well, all right. Well, we all have things to learn.
Sure, sure. So I learned that you can monetize them. So I went through the YouTube Partner Program and got monetized, and my channel started growing and I started getting paychecks from Google. And I'm like, this is going really well. At the time, I was struggling with jobs and struggling with, because I was working at a warehouse as one of the managers at the warehouse, but it was still a struggle. And I don't know, I've not really talked to you about this, but I have a lot of attention deficit type behaviors, and certain things are a struggle for me. And working, having a boss, having a structure, those type of things are a struggle for me. And there's a lot of folks that are like me that have attention deficit type struggling behaviors. So when I started working, making YouTube videos, my attention deficit, my sanguine personality kind of came out, and it was entertaining for me, and it was entertaining for the viewers.
All right. So we'll dig much deeper into the channel and, you know, advice you can give and things that you've learned and reasons for your success, because I am interested in every last one of those topics. But can we, and I know this is a very personal thing, but can we talk a little bit about exactly where things were for you before this all got started? Because this is such, I mean, like somebody could make a movie about your life, I think, because of exactly where you were kind of on the eve of this.
Okay.
And whatever you feel like disclosing, I will happily receive.
Sure, sure. Well, I'll preface this by saying that during my entire 20s, I was active duty in the military in the U.S. Coast Guard. And I decided to get out of the Coast Guard after being in for a decade. And I got my real estate license in Las Vegas. And this was at the time in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I started selling houses with a group of realtors during the boom phase of the Las Vegas real estate market. And at that time, I made a big mistake with this group of realtors. And they said, hey, do you want to try some speed? It'll make our prospecting more fun. And I said, yeah, sure, why not? I didn't realize that I was trying crystal methamphetamines.
Oh, my. Okay.
So that started a love affair with a chemical that led me just within a few years to complete street homelessness. And to be honest, I didn't have a set of keys for 4 years. I didn't own a car. I didn't have a place to go. I was either on the streets, couch surfing, or in an institution somewhere. So yeah, went from being in the Coast Guard doing drug interdictions right down to being a drug user and in the lowest level of drug user, which is a petty thief and a nuisance to the community.
This is unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable that this has a happy ending, because I can't imagine that's the norm in these situations.
No, no. A lot of people don't make it.
So what was going through your head during this time? Because I was just saying on the episode the other day, talking about actually a trip Jenna and I took to Los Angeles some months ago, where at night you walk around some parts of the city and there are just, it's like they're dead men walking. They're just people.
It's true.
Yeah. And you just wonder, maybe there is no political solution for this, because some of them don't, I think some of them genuinely don't know any other way to live.
Sure.
So what
was there a political solution? There needs to be political opportunity. Though my opportunity for my recovery wasn't through anything political. It wasn't through the state. It wasn't through government whatsoever. It was through the churches.
Well, did you find them or did they find you? Like, did you go in seeking help?
No, there was divine intervention, I believe, that took place. There are certain things in life that are just far beyond coincidence. So, for instance, you said, what was going through my head? I remember during my time, and in the Bible, it says that God has given us a sound mind. So I actually still had, my mind was saying, Paul, this isn't for you, though my body was doing something else. And addiction, and through the biology of addiction, what is going on in my head is that I'm doing drugs and it's releasing serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine, all kinds of things in my brain. And my brain wants to continue that at all cost. So I was doing things that I, my spirit and my mind said, don't do. So I remember my mom picking me up one time and I hadn't bathed in weeks. I was looking a mess. And she said, I don't know you anymore. I don't know where my son went. And I said, Mom, I'm right here. I'm inside of this. And it's true. So anyone that we lock eyes with that's on the street, that's going through these issues, that looks disheveled and homeless, that person's still there. So what happened with me is that I was out in the desert in Las Vegas, and I just started screaming at God. This was at 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm screaming at God with my hands up, saying, I want to get back to being a dad again. I want to get back to having my right mind. And so it wasn't auditory or anything like that, but God spoke to me and said, go to the Las Vegas Rescue Mission. So I did. So I walked 20 miles from the area in Las Vegas, actually it was in Henderson, and I walked 20 miles and I went to the Las Vegas Rescue Mission. And I don't know if you know this, but the rescue missions, they don't get any money from the government. They only get money from donations or from the local churches. So they behave a little different than the average, what do you call them? The recovery medical outfits. So like if you go into rehab, that's where it was rehab. If you go into a rehab, they usually have some type of government gives them money. Well, they operate differently because of that. So I went to the Las Vegas Rescue Mission, and then I went to the Rockford Rescue Mission here in Illinois, and I spent a year and a half recovering from my, now it's not just a meth addiction, it was an addiction to self. I was just selfish to the maximum. So I had to relearn a bunch of stuff. I had to regain my moral compass. So at the rescue mission, I think they had three phases. They called it the rescue, and then the recovery, and then the restoration back into the community. So they do all that. And so after a year and a half, this isn't a 30-day recovery period. This is a recovery program. It was long enough to where I am able to go back and be a complement to the community. So hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah. Well, wow. Did it ever? So you lived there for a period of time?
Yes. Yeah. I lived at the Rockford Rescue Mission for a year and a half. And
okay.
When I say I lived there, I was doing, now there's a 12-step recovery program. And then the recovery program that I was in was the one step, which was Jesus. And I'm not downplaying the 12-step recovery program, but it wasn't really for me because it became its own entity. It became its own addiction, basically. It was going to meetings every day and constantly analyzing and looking at all of my defects of character and all of my past behaviors. And all we did was talk about the war stories of us when we were drinking and drugging. And when I went to the mission, it wasn't focused on drugs and alcohol. We focused on what we're going to be doing for God, what we're going to be doing for our community, what we're going to be doing for other people. And it was a complete shift from the traditional 12-step program.
Wow. Now, that's also interesting because I probably a couple of weeks ago, I had somebody on I know very well who's quit drinking for over 5 years. And she said likewise that, and again, if going to meetings works for some people, we're not saying don't do it.
Sure, sure.
But for her, she felt like that wasn't really what she needed. And right. She's not looked back. She's been completely successful since then. Did you, I know these are all very personal questions, but do you have any relapses?
When we talk about relapse, I'm going to say no to drugs and alcohol. But in the 12-step recovery world, they would probably say that I don't have 15 years, 6 months, and 3 days of sobriety, even though I do. They would say no because I have had, like when I broke my toes, I went to the doctor and about 9 months ago. I broke two toes and then had a massive gout attack because of some things that happened in my foot. And so I took pain medication. I've taken medications for my attention deficit. In the 12-step AA world, they would say, no, you reset your sobriety date. I don't agree with that. That's not a relapse. So in the 12-step world, they would contest my sobriety of 15 years, 6 months, and 4 days.
Okay,
I will hold on to that.
Yeah. No, we wouldn't. Oh, you would. Okay. So did you manage to get a job? Were you employed while you were living there and you saved up some money so you could get out, that kind of thing?
Well, kind of. In the restoration phase of being at the Rockford Rescue Mission, is that we went and we applied for jobs. And I applied for a job at the warehouse that I was referring to earlier. So I went to the interview, and this was back in 2008. So I got clean and sober in 2007. And in 2008 is when we're getting ready to be restored back into the community. And I was at my job interview, and there was six people at the interview interviewing me for a product manager position. And I was very worried because I hadn't had a job in over 4 years. From the beginning of my drug use, you're pretty much not employable. All the way through living at the Rockford Rescue Mission for a year and a half, I was like, man, they're going to see this huge gap in employment. Guess what? It never was brought up. No one ever noticed it. And the HR lady, she said, tell me about a hero that you've had in your life. And I said, well, my hero is Jesus. You know, what Jesus did for us to actually take the robe of divinity and come down and become a human just like the rest of us. And then he took the blame for everything that I've done wrong. That's my hero. And I thought, I just blew it. I'm not going to get this job, getting all religious. But they stepped out of the room. The owner of the company came in and hired me right on the spot.
How about that?
And I worked there for the next 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So this is quite a story. So now let's go to your channel.
Okay.
Which is, you know, in some ways more mundane than this extraordinary story, but yet
has its own. It's way better.
Yeah. It has its own fascinations, really.
Sure.
you know, I have a little bit of a YouTube presence, but you didn't just make videos. You seem to make a connection with the audience, even though the activities you're doing wouldn't seem very sexy to a lot of people.
Right,
but yet,
right.
You were the whole package. You had the videos, you had the irresistible titles for the videos, but also you were sharing something of yourself. And I seem to recall you attributing some of your massive success. You're at almost 230,000 subscribers to that aspect of it.
Sure. Yeah. And I do pay attention to the subscriber count, though I kind of view that as a vanity number, because to me, it's about views. It's about watch time. It's about what are people connecting to. And I look at my analytics in a particular way where it's not about me, it's about my viewers. I care what are they getting out of it. So a long time ago, I guess 15 years ago, someone told me, whenever you're doing something, Paul, show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. So I live by those four things. So when I was let go from my job at the warehouse, and that has its own story, but I was let go at my job that I really did love, and I'm like, what am I going to do now? And at the same time, I'm going through a divorce. So things were really low, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm doing all the right things. I'm going to church. I'm playing in the church worship band. I'm giving back to my community. How come a divorce is happening? How come unemployment is happening? Those things still happen. Life still happens. But I put a lot of effort into just focusing on God, focusing on the next right thing to do, and focusing on others and not myself. So in my dark time, I started watching those YouTube videos, going through my divorce, and I was living in a studio apartment and didn't have very much. I had no money virtually, and I was just kind of bummed out. And so when I started doing the YouTube videos and people were connecting with them, I started my YouTube videos because the YouTube videos served me first, and now I'm serving the YouTube community. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So then I started making videos and then paying attention to the feedback from the viewers of, Paul, we like this, we don't like that. Can you do more of this? And I was listening to the comments, and I was listening to the emails that I was getting, and I was paying attention to my analytics. So going back to those four things, showing up, that I need to show up physically, I need to show up mentally, I need to be prepared, I need to be there. I need to be doing this on a daily basis. So show up, pay attention, I need to do my analytics. I need to see what is happening with my channel now that I'm, at that time, I was making a couple hundred dollars a month. And then show up, pay attention, tell the truth. So I'm always, no matter what, be honest about what I'm doing. And when I wasn't attached to the outcome, when I wasn't worried about subscriber count, I wasn't worried about views, I was concerned about how are my viewers taking this. And one other thing I do want to mention is that when I was bummed out going through this divorce, watching YouTube videos, I was on my phone. And some YouTubers would say, hey, everybody, welcome to the blah, blah channel. And I'm like, I'm not everybody. I'm me. I'm just sitting in this dark room with my phone. I remember those feelings. So when I'm talking in my videos, I look at that camera like I'm talking to a single person in that studio apartment, an individual. So I will say, good morning. Hey, let's take a look at this light here. There's a switch on it. What do you think it does? I talk to the camera like it's a person, because it is. On the other end of that, there's a person that might be going through some stuff that they are talking to me. That's what I do. I think a little bit different than the average YouTuber that says, hey, good morning, everybody out there in YouTube world. It's not. It's an individual person with a phone in their hand you're talking to.
Yeah. I definitely hear that. So let's get right down to the brass tacks of this thing. How do you monetize this? Now, you already talked about how YouTube itself, through advertising or whatever, you can monetize your videos that way. But there are other things you can do in addition to that. So for one thing, if you are recovering, let's say, scrap metal or some useful thing, do you make money by actually going and selling that? And I suppose that's indirectly revenue from the video. I know you sell merch. Like, don't you sell mugs?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
talk about that stuff.
I think it's 5 streams of income right now with what I do. Now, I mentioned earlier about being a sanguine type personality, you know, the happy-go-lucky type, the positive type. And we also have a sad, darker aspect to our personalities. But also being attention deficit, I don't work well in being an employee, all right? So now that I've realize that I can't do the employee thing. I'm going to do work that is different. I have, like I said, multiple streams of income now. So I make more money now than I did when I had a traditional job. And I think it is even more important for us to realize that we all need to have a side hustle or two or five or more, because the world, like my father was hired by Lockheed in the 60s, and he had that exact same job for almost 30 years, and he retired. Most of us that I know aren't in that position anymore. They can't have that traditional job where they're going to get that retirement at the end of the year or at the end of their career of faithful service. We need to serve others outside of that employment world. So you talked about mugs. There's also my PayPal tip jar. There is having what they call memberships that on the YouTube channel, I can give special videos for the folks that are members. And that's another stream. I have a stream of obviously the scrap metal that I sell. There's also resale. So let's say I come across some really nice furniture. I can put that on Facebook Marketplace, or I can put that on Virage Sale. That's another stream of income. And of course, I keep track of all this stuff. It's tax season. And because of that, I have to put all my numbers together, because part of those four things I talked about, show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. I have to tell the truth. I have to pay my taxes on all income. And of course, I take all deductions that are allotted to me. Looking at my numbers, yeah, I sold a lot of scrap metal. So over 100,000 pounds of scrap metal that I found on the curb or in a dumpster that didn't show up in my local landfill, it actually showed up at the scrapyard, which metal is infinitely recyclable. It's an element. So 100,000 pounds and tens of thousands of dollars just in the scrap metal that I'm returning. So you count all of those from ad revenue to, you can get sponsorship. You can have companies, if you talk about their product, let's say I want to talk about a particular tool that I use. Well, I can get paid by that. Of course, there's affiliate marketing. So I think that's more than five.
Yeah, that's a lot. So you, when you got started, of course, probably didn't know about any of those.
None at all. And beyond ignorant, I was going through where I should have learned a particular stream of income. And then I realized later on, like, man, I should have paid attention at that point. So there's so many opportunities. I posted a video where the scrapyard owner was talking about that opportunity is in abundance right now, that a lot of us aren't paying attention to all of the opportunities that are showing up that are almost in our face.
Hey folks, quick sponsor message. If you're like me, you feel like no sooner have you completed one meal when somehow already it's time to prepare the next one. Well, what if you had a nice big bundle of juicy, tender, and flavorful Omaha steaks at the ready? My family's been ordering from Omaha Steaks since probably around the time of the first Ron Paul presidential campaign. Super convenient, great value, and absolutely delicious. They have everything from perfectly aged tender steaks to juicy burgers, decadent desserts, classic comfort meals, everything you need for a romantic Valentine's Day dinner, for a whole bunch of people coming over to watch a game, or even just for a regular weekday night. Every time you order from Omaha Steaks, you are getting five generations of family-owned expertise. Not to mention, steak is fast becoming the most politically incorrect meal there is, so that's all the more reason to stock up on Omaha Steaks. Plus, with this special offer, visit omahasteaks.com and enter Woods at checkout to get $30 off your order. So do what the Woodses do. Stock up on Omaha Steaks. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code Woods at checkout to get an extra $30 off your order. You're already saving up to 55% on select Omaha Steaks customer favorites, but now you can save an extra $30 off your order when you go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code Woods at checkout. Minimum order may be required. You were mentioning the view count and that the subscriber number is more of a vanity number. So let's say a little something about the view count, because you have videos that have been viewed millions of times.
That's correct.
Millions of times. How do you promote these videos? Have you ever paid to advertise, to boost them on social media or anything like that? How have you gotten them out there? Because most people who make videos would kill to get 10,000 views.
Yeah, so to tell the truth, which is that third part that I always talk about, is that absolutely not. You never need to pay for views or pay for anything. And I think view count also is a vanity number. So subscribers and view count, I really don't pay a lot of attention to that. I look at the watch time. How much time is someone spending watching the video? And I can look at the spikes in my watch time report. So let's say at minute one, there is 90% of the people are still watching the video. That's a really good number. I want to keep that. So I think you're saying, to get those large numbers, do I promote it? No, because I have hired basically YouTube to do that for me. So there's a revenue split. So if there's an ad revenue or any other type of revenue, because there's like three or four ways of making money from YouTube, there's a split. I keep 65% and they keep the rest of the 35%. That's a large number that I, the content creator, am giving to YouTube. That's the way I view it. YouTube is wonderful at promoting videos that keep the attention of a targeted audience.
So the duration of the view really does matter.
Absolutely. There's about 100 metrics that YouTube uses of people clicking away from the video, people rewinding the video. It's like getting an extra 10 points in their system. If someone rewinds a part of your video and watches it again or does that several times, if hundreds of people are doing that, YouTube's algorithm notices that and will promote the video out to 10 times more people. So I let YouTube do its work and they are the best. I mean, I think they're the best platform out there right now.
That is fascinating.
Right. And so my job is always, what is my viewer taking from this? Just like what you do, what is the listeners, what are they taking away from this? Is this the best that you can give when you're trying to explain a certain topic? If you do the best that you can do, or even better than you've ever done before, it's going to get noticed by that YouTube algorithm and the video is going to get promoted out.
All right. Well, now I'm learning stuff here. I had no idea about this. But then the fact that you can also earn a little dough by selling merchandise with your logo on it, that shows that you've made a connection with the people who watch, because they want something that comes from you, that symbolizes you.
Yeah,
whereas, you know, if you're just, you know, like, who would want like a CNN mug? I feel no personal connection to CNN. I feel nothing but contempt for them. But they do feel a personal connection with you because of the easy way you talk into the camera and you talk about, sometimes you talk about things that aren't directly related to the subject matter of the channel, but that are related to you and your life. People kind of begin to feel like they know you.
Well, yeah. And it's still an edited version of Paul. You know, I will take out stuff. You know, if I say something that's off or if I stub my toe and I say the wrong word, yeah, those things are all edited out. So this is a condensed version of Paul, though I am connected to that viewer. So when I say, hey, what do you think of this particular item? I really am asking them. I want to read their comments in the comment section. And I do interact almost with every comment. And I can get hundreds of comments a day. I've gotten up to 1,000 comments in a day and probably no fewer than 100 comments in a day. And it takes time. And to read them, to think about it, to respond appropriately. And I'm attention deficit. So when I get through 70 or 80 or 90 comments, I'm getting kind of tired. And I'm like, oh, wow, I got 400 more to go.
Oh, gee, yeah.
Yeah, so, but they're important to me and they know that they are important to me on an individual basis. So it is a relationship. And I know on their part, it's a parasocial relationship because I don't know them per se. They know a lot about me because they just spent 30 minutes with me. Do I know a lot about them? No, I don't. But I can always tell when one of my videos is kind of going viral is because I get a lot of not so nice comments and they're harsh. And I'm like, oh, I must be having it. So I'll go and look at my analytics and sure enough, there'll be a spike in one of my videos' views and I can get some, like I said, not so nice comments. But once people start to get to know me and realize that, you know, at heart, I do have the best intentions when I'm scrapping. And sometimes I won't pull a piece of brass off something that should be taken off and I put it in the steel pile. I'm not doing that on purpose, but boy, will they let me have it.
Geez, some people. No. That's the last thing that would occur to me to do or say. So I don't want you to get into numbers, but let's just say that you've done quite well with this, right? I mean, you said, you're earning more than you did at any traditional job.
That's correct.
And although there is plenty of work involved, as you've indicated, how do you actually do the videos, like technically speaking?
I have a workflow. And
well, I mean, like, do you have a Do you always do like a selfie thing, or do you have a camera on a stand, or how does that?
It's a GoPro. It's one of the latest GoPros that I actually have strapped to my skull. I wear like a hat.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm walking through. So it's they're getting a point of view that I have. And what's great about that is that GoPro has three microphones going in different directions. So you can get a stereo sense of the audio. And to me, audio is as important as the video portion of what I'm creating. So I have a windsock around the camera so you don't get that wind noise. I care about how they're hearing my voice. And sometimes with the camera so close to my mouth, you can hear mouth breathing. And when I'm picking up something, I'm going, oh, you hear all of that stuff. But it makes for much more of a personal sense of me grabbing some metal that's on the curb, getting ready to go to the landfill. I pick it this up and I throw it in the back of the truck. You hear all the banging and crashing of metal. When I'm at the scrapyard, you see me, you can see my feet climbing up into the back of the truck and I'm chucking stuff off and I'm interacting with the personnel at the scrapyard. It's
authentic.
Yeah, it is. It is. And now I have, what, 600 videos of me doing this. And it's not all scrap related. That most of it is. It's, you know, the 95% of the video is going to be scrap related. But of course, at the end, I put in stuff that I want. I might put in a clip of me playing in the worship band at church, or I have a clip of my dog, Olivia, or me walking the dog, or me playing guitar, or me just having a rant about some of the wrong things that are going on in the recycling business. So it could be anything, but I reserve that last bit of the video to be my whatever portion. So every video has scrap in it, but that last little portion, if I choose to, I'm going to have just a whatever. And people really do enjoy that.
So there's enough different in each video because of all the different things you're coming across to make it fresh. You're not worried that eventually this will kind of burn out because you've done everything there is to do.
Right. Yeah. New things are being thrown out every moment of the day. And sometimes we're surprised. The other day, and you know, I'm a musician. So I, first and foremost, I'm a bass player and a guitar player and a drummer. So the other day I'm driving, and I am not kidding, I pull up, there's this big pile of trash at the curb, and in the middle of this trash is an entire 5-piece drum set, including multiple cymbals, cymbal stands, there's even a cage for all the cymbals. I'm like, are you kidding me? I found bass guitars and guitars. So if you say, does it get old? It might get old for some people sometimes, but it's always new stuff. And there's stuff that I find that I have no idea what I'm looking at. And someone will say, Paul, I can't believe you found that prosthetic leg. Do you realize it's made of titanium? And I'm like, no, thought it was made of plastic. I don't know. So there's so many things that I don't know that I come across that when 10,000 or 100,000 or 2.6 million people view, they're going to have the answer. That's a great thing about what you're doing is that when you do your podcast, you have tons and tons of experts that are listening, and collectively, we know a lot.
Yeah, I sometimes have people asking me kind of what I just asked you. Well, don't you run out of topics?
Yeah,
but
never.
The topics are endless because even if I don't have an evergreen topic, like some topic in economics or history or philosophy or whatever, there's always something going on in the world. Current events gives me an infinite, potentially infinite array of topics. So there's never a shortage. So that keeps me in business.
Yeah.
I guess the other thing I'd want to know is, especially as we more or less wrap up, do you, based on your experience, have advice for people who may not want to do scrap like you do, but may find it rather attractive, you know, to spend their days doing things that they actually enjoy and that where they don't have to answer to some boss or anything like that?
Absolutely. The way things are changing in 2023 now, that we have to do something versus just having our particular employment. So with that in mind, choose the thing that gives you the most joy because you're probably going to be good at it. So things that you really like, you're going to be knowledge, you're going to be good at it, you're going to have the skill. My recommendation is to film it. Most everyone has a smartphone in their pocket with a wonderful camera that is better than most GoPros. Pull that phone out, kind of narrate what you're doing, post it on YouTube. Even if it doesn't take off, there are individuals that are going to enjoy you sharing part of your day. If it does take off, that can be another stream of income. A third part is that you're documenting, you're chronicling your day. So you can look back at, let's say, you know, I have 600 plus videos. I can look back at 4 years ago, 5 years ago, the very start of my YouTube videos from 5.5 years ago. I can look at that, see it was there improvement. Wow, I forgot that I found that guitar or ukulele at that particular residence. So chronicle your day. Throw it up on YouTube. See what happens.
Yeah, why not? Why not? And especially because it seems to me we should take advantage of the unique situation that we're in this day and age. We have tools like the ones I'm using at this moment to broadcast this episode.
Right.
That we would have thought were out of science fiction 30 years ago.
Yeah.
That I could turn my computer on and every day reach potentially anybody in the world. You got to be bananas. There's no way that's possible.
And you and I are hundreds of miles away from each other right now, and we're having a wonderful conversation.
Yes, absolutely. And speaking of that, by the way, I am so hopeful that we'll be able to get to Chicago again. So I know you don't live in Chicago proper, but I can reach you from Chicago.
Yeah.
I'm so hopeful we're able to be able to return there again before too long, because for one thing, just having that nonstop motor mouth conversation with you where I was picking your brain about all this stuff, I could just keep on doing that. And yes, I also have things to contribute to the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, of course you do.
But my gosh, to see somebody in real life and then realize, whoa, wait a minute, this is actually my wife's uncle and you're having all this success with it. And not even because you took some course or you read some ebook or whatever. You just through old-fashioned trial and error, you just tried something. You had the guts to actually have a pattern interrupt in your life and try something. And wow, was it a good idea for you to have done that. So in the future, do you have any ambitions? I'd like to do this in 2023. Or is it just more or less stay the course? If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, I have tried a lot in my past of having goals and goal setting and stuff. I have to reduce that to the time period of like next week or later today, just because I am attention deficit. And future is hard for me, my brain, to actually work with. So I make lists and I want to keep on serving others. So if that's through video, if it's through podcasts like you and I are doing right now, I've had a lot of people talk to me and said, Paul, you need to have a podcast. You need to be talking about just daily topics. Even though in my videos, I do not talk about politics whatsoever. I avoid it completely. Do I have opinions? Absolutely. Do I have actions that I take politically? Absolutely. Because I believe that all politics is local and that I need to be doing something, not just having some opinion. So I would definitely recommend, all of us to be just doing more. You know, when in doubt, do something, not when in doubt, have an opinion, if that makes any sense.
Now, that makes perfect sense. And so one thing people could do is take your advice and on the show notes page, where I will also have a link to your channel, of course, I'll also link to that recent episode of the Tom Woods Show with Matt McWilliams that you liked so much. I bought 4 copies of his book, Turn Your Passions into Profits, for my 4 oldest daughters.
Yeah, I bought one too.
Oh, good, good, good. Yeah, he sent me a signed one because, you know, I did have him on the show.
What?
So I get a little perk like that. But yeah, because I thought, I have a 19-year-old daughter who is in the sciences and she's got a particular interest that I know she could monetize. So I'm going to sneak this title over to her and say, look, no pressure. If you never monetize it, you can still, you know, I'm still your dad and everything's fine. But if you ever want to, this is how to do it. And I just, maybe my kids never use the knowledge, but what's the harm in them having it?
Right.
You know, at least it gives them options and it gives them a base from which, they can
instruct
their own children.
And I like what Matt talks about. There's a lot of new ways of making money that require very little effort on our part. Just affiliate marketing with my social media presence. So yeah, we can make money like with my 5 streams of income. Not any one of them are humongous, but you put them all together and all my needs are met and I'm able to continue on with my pursuit of happiness.
Yes, right. And the nice thing about having the multiple ones is if one of them should ever drop to zero for whatever reason,
right.
You know, maybe a platform shuts down or whatever, you get kicked off of something or people are no longer interested in buying a particular thing, whatever it is, that doesn't kneecap you.
It does,
because you don't need, you don't strictly need that one. Yeah. Whereas on the other hand, there are always opportunities to develop new ones. So yes, one may drop off, but another one may pick up if you're alert to it. So that to me, in terms of like my retirement, I would much rather just build up a bunch of these streams like this than just hope that the allocation of stocks that I've chosen will do well over the years. I mean, sometimes, you know, I do have some investments like that.
Sure.
For the most part, I really just want to invest in myself.
Yeah. And there is joy in doing that because investing in ourselves gives us the opportunity to serve others.
Which is what I am trying my best to do, and especially over the past year. So really, I don't know what to say other than what you've done is so impressive. You did it. Yes, I'll grant your caveat that there may have been a divine hand in all this.
It certainly
but
is.
You didn't get, Glenn Beck didn't promote your channel. You know, it wasn't like anything like that. You just did it and you learned and you got better and you put in the elbow grease interacting with people who watch your videos. You built up a kind of a community. People really, really like you as a person. That's really well done. That didn't happen by accident. That was just sheer hard work and willingness to learn. And if more people did that, there'd be a lot more happiness in the world. So congratulations.
Thanks,
I'm going to put Scrap and Pallet Man. You can just type it into any search engine, but I'll also have it linked directly at tomwoods.com/2268. Thank you, Paul. And I can't wait for our paths to cross again.
All right, Tom, you're awesome. Just remember to stay awesome, be awesome, do your thing, be you.
All right, folks, that is another episode of the Tom Woods Show. I will see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.